ASO overtime rates are raising eyebrows as the city election draws near. Meanwhile, a new poll shows President Trump is divisive in Florida, but has high approval in our corner of the state. And Florida's new Secretary of State is forced to resign after blackface photos emerged. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning. We're live from Studio 5, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. Just ahead, all of the biggest stories of the week with our Friday roundtable. You can get on the line now, 549-2937. Join us. Then later, we'll tell you what Jacksonville-based Bold Bean Coffee has been brewing up, in addition to their great cups of Joe. All of that ahead this morning. But first, it's Friday, and here to discuss a very busy news week, we welcome Dan Scanlon of the Florida Times Union. Hey, Dan.
Good morning.
Our regular contributor and Real Talk podcast host, Charles Griggs, is here.
Good morning, Melissa.
And radio host, Angela Spears of Angela Spears Communications.
Good morning, Melissa. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday, everybody. And lots to discuss this Friday morning. Lots of news this week. Later, we'll tell you about a Florida election official who had to resign after pictures of him were published in blackface costume. There's also been a major arrest in South Florida related to the Mueller probe, as Roger Stone now faces seven federal counts. That's coming up, too. But our top story is reports of unlimited overtime for the JSO, raising eyebrows in the run-up to the March city elections. The Times Union reports that the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office has quietly been using significant overtime pay to blanket crime-ridden areas around town with extra police in the weeks leading up to the March election. The agency confirmed that in a statement. Now, Mayor Lenny Curry and Sheriff Mike Williams are both on the ballot, both favored to win re-election, but they are running against opponents accusing them of failing to bring down high crime rates in Duval County. So we're going to begin the hour with a closer look at this and ask this question: is the overtime going to help? Is it going to make a difference in crime rates? Let's discuss this right now. It's 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Dan Scanlon, let's begin with you. The Times Union reporting out this story. They found out that there is unlimited OT for all for police. It's a new program called Operation Safe and Sound. It began last week and it will run through March 18th. That's one day before the election.
Yes, and this is work done by a very popular columnist now, Nate Monroe. But to be fair to the sheriff's office, this has been done before. They have sometimes blanketed the streets. Certainly in the past years, there's been some recent gang task force activity out there, and a previous sheriff did do some things. But that said, it does sound, as Nate did comment, awfully suspicious that this is going right through Election Day and then not on Election Day, part of a memo that he found stating that they don't want to make it look too obvious on that day in order to avoid the appearance of interference with the election, quote unquote, and that the emails were sent out to officers, basically, if you want to do overtime, do it before your shift, after your shift, and don't confuse this with their approved after-hours off-duty security work. This is starting your day job early, ending your job late, applying more of your existing force in places, including apparently the past few days around UF Health, because there's been some armed robberies in their parking lots.
We don't know how much Operation Safe and Sound will cost taxpayers. Officers are being told they can work as much or as little as they want, but they can take on as many extra hours as they can manage to do. The police are telling officers you're allowed to work whenever you want. It is needed 24 hours a day. This overtime pay also extends to community service officers, or CSOs. They respond to minor calls like traffic accidents. Now, as the TU also reports, former Sheriff John Rutherford has used overtime when he was sheriff to respond to an explosion in gun violence. This isn't an unprecedented thing, Charles Griggs. It's more the timing and the scope of it that I think is making it newsworthy.
Yeah, absent of the fact that this isn't an election year or an election time, this probably wouldn't be a story. But the question that a lot of people in the community are asking is, what does this mean? What type of strategy is this? You know, just what are the officers going to be doing? You know, what can they be looking forward to? You know, Operation Safe and Sound, you know, sounds like a good initiative, but we don't know exactly what that means. So with the exception of officers being able to stay on the job for as long as they want. Is there some type of strategy per community? Is there a way for citizens to be involved? Or, you know, what is the, is there some type of best practice that they identified that this is aligned with, that is going to reduce crime? And then the other thing is that if it is something that's just in place specifically for the run up to an election, you know, it probably wouldn't do much good because we already are looking at the numbers from the previous years that are more significant and how crime has impacted the community. So in the last 6 weeks run up to election, it probably won't make a significant impact in how people think what they believe crime is and their perception of crime in the community.
It's 549-2937. Let us know what your thoughts are about increased overtime for city police to bring down crime rates in Jacksonville. Angela Spears, certainly this is a vulnerable point for incumbents on the ballot leading up to the March 19th election. Public safety is such a core responsibility, and it's not as though huge efforts haven't been made to address this over the last several years and going back to administrations before that. But it remains a vexing and intractable issue for Jacksonville, Florida, no matter who is in office.
A big, big issue. We all know the current mayor, Lenny Curry, defeated my old boss, Alvin Brown. This was one of his major issues, was reducing crime. And just piggybacking on what Charles mentioned, people have been asking me and talking with me about, is there a true plan when it comes to what's going to happen when you're in these neighborhoods, you're doing things, are you addressing mental health issues? What about the job issues, economic issues, bringing jobs into the areas of, okay, once we rid the crime, what's going to happen next? So what's the support system? What about the support system for the officers? If they can work however many hours they want, the fatigue issues, are we helping them with that? So many different issues are coming in with it. And Melissa, you're correct. This is something that I think will continue on. That we know during Mayor Curry's time in office so far, there have been more than 350 people killed in this city alone. So what are we doing with this rate? Is it decreasing? Are we helping? What's going on?
Well, really? 2 points for right now is that as we're speaking, the city council's meeting with the sheriff and others for the crime task force that the city council president put up. Also, at 2 o'clock this morning, police responded to Barnett and West 7th Street to find homicide victim number 10 dead in the middle of the street from multiple gunshot wounds. So while we had 18 less homicides last year than the year before, it's still starting out to be a pretty busy 2019. And so if an officer gets a lead and can extend their day for an hour or two and maybe track down that lead and save the next person on that shift, maybe there's some benefit. There's always initiative out there to do some of your own investigation before handing it over or working with detectives. So there could be some good if you get a lead and you go for it. But
exactly. Good point.
I don't think anyone's arguing that the sheriff's office isn't capable of doing a good job when it comes to identifying crime as it's taking place. I think what the concern is that people believe that this is a time when the community is trying to come together to solve crime. And if we're going to have these types of initiatives, some people want to know how they can play a role. What can they do? How can they help the sheriff's office in supporting their extra efforts to bring down the numbers on crime? And also, if this is an initiative that's going to end on March 18th, is there some type of plan for another initiative? And how can people play a role in that? And if they can support the sheriff's office in doing more to support crime reduction in the community.
We're talking about crime rates in Jacksonville here on our Friday Media Roundtable as police step up overtime in the run-up to the March city elections. 549-2937. Give us a call. Twyla is in downtown Jacksonville. Hey, Twyla. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Okay, so I just got in the car, my husband and I, and we were listening to your show, and it just made me think about, exactly what the police are doing and are they being aggressive. Last night, my husband and I, we were coming from the Loop on our way home, and we were pulled over. The cop said that our tag didn't belong to us, which it did, and then all of a sudden, all these other cop cars, it had to be at least five of them. They swarm us and lights are on and they're coming up to us asking all these questions, take our ID, and I'm terrified. So eventually I start recording and we're just sitting there like 5 or 10 minutes And then they come back and say, oh, there was a reporting. The reason we pulled you over because there was a report of a lady that got kidnapped by a guy in a black Lexus. And so we left, and then they just kept riding around. So when we called to find out if there was indeed that reporting, and they said there was no reporting of any kidnappings in the last 24 hours. So now I'm listening to the show, and I'm still like, I couldn't even sleep last night. Still upset about, we had just been pulled over some time ago where the supervisors got involved for no reason. And this just keeps happening. It's just not right. And now you're telling me that they get overtime and they can do whatever they want. It just makes me feel like they're out here just being aggressive and they don't understand the stress that they cause on people in the community.
Oh, well, Twyla, do you feel like you were racially profiled?
Absolutely. I mean, if there was no call that no one was kidnapped, then why were we pulled over? We have the right tag on our car, so why are you even saying that our tag doesn't belong to us? Why were we sitting there 10 minutes with nothing? Why are you asking me for my cell phone number? Why are you asking me all these questions? And then we find out there's no call, so what's going on here? And that's how it made me feel. Absolutely. What's the other reason?
And then did they eventually say, sorry, wrong, were wrong?
No, they said one guy, and then they would never like stand in front of us. They would stand like behind the window so we couldn't see them. But then one cop, he finally came and he said, oh, we got a reporting of a kidnapping. And the lady called in and said it was a black man in a black Lexus that kidnapped her. And we were in a black Lexus, and that's why they pulled us over.
And they just eventually sent you on your way. Yes. Okay. Well, Twyla, I appreciate you sharing that, and I'm sorry that happened to you, and thank you for the call.
Yeah.
Okay, Charles.
Yeah, everybody wants to feel safe in their own community, and no matter where they are, and they want to feel protected, and they want to feel protected most of all by the people who are, who will be sworn in to serve and protect them as well. And, you know, this is one of those instances where we're talking about how we can navigate the relationship between people who are, you know, sworn to protect and serve, and people in the community who are, you know, who are taxpayers who are going along their merry way. And that's why it's important for when you have initiatives like this for, you know, those people who are implementing those initiatives to fully engage the community in what's going on. And you never know, you might get people who want to try to support you in your efforts.
And it's so true what Charles is saying. Community engagement is so, so crucial. Having that community input, having that community, that citizen board sitting there with a sheriff's office, if it's going to do something like Operation Safe and Sound, to see how it's going to work. And it goes back to having that strategy, as we've been mentioning, having a plan for it and having that plan afterwards. Are you going to be able to address the different issues that are going on? Mental health. Are you going to be able to address the economic issues? People need jobs, just different things, strategies.
Let's take a few more calls. Michelle is in Southeast Georgia. Go ahead, Michelle. Michelle, you're on the air. All right, Michelle, give us a call back. Lots of people in the queue. We'll get to them in just a moment. Dan Scanlon, you wanted to comment.
Registered news media in Jacksonville get ears alerts from the sheriff's office, and I can tell you we did not receive anything regarding a kidnapping. That does not mean that there wasn't something that got to a certain level of patrol involvement and then was swiftly rectified. But all I can note about Twyla's phone call was the emotion in her voice.
Sure.
We've all been pulled over for silly stuff over the years. This was not silly stuff. What happened to her?
No one should feel intimidated by a police officer except criminals. And that should be the standard.
And certainly most African-Americans will tell you that this happens to them far more frequently than it happens to
white
people. So that is certainly part of the discussion. And John is on the west side. Hi, John. Good morning. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Well, my thing is this. I'm a native of Jacksonville, Florida, and I can tell you that we have had this high crime and this we need more police and we need more money. First of all, the police force is not ran efficient. And what I mean by that, you can't have no job where one man pulls over and does his job, and then you get five different police cars come and does nothing. They sit there for a whole hour or two to do nothing. I mean, and constantly racially profiling in Jacksonville. The problem is that there is no economic stimulation on that side of town, period. And that is the problem. Now, we can sit up here and we can keep talking about what the city council doing in their crime initiative. No, what the city council need to do is build some jobs in that area, stop stopping companies, big corporations, from rehabbing the gateway area. Okay, so those people can go to work, and I guarantee you crime will fall. But because right in this city, downtown, they make about $60-something million a year just on the jail system. I mean, you got a big old jail in the middle of downtown. That's why you can't do nothing with the city. And it needs to stop. And they need to stop with the city council gentrifying that area and then come along and talking about we need more police and more money.
All right, John. John, thanks for the call. Thanks for that, John.
I think increasingly we hear from the community that if we're going to put extra efforts into law enforcement at any given moment, we need to put extra efforts into economic development in those areas where we find the most concern.
Jeff is in Arlington. Hey, Jeff, what are your thoughts?
Well, if it makes sense to give overtime to everyone, and obviously a certain amount of overtime is always more fiscally responsible, but this has been an ongoing problem. And if we're giving unlimited overtime, it seems like perhaps we need to increase the officers rather than paying the ones that are currently working more and fatiguing them to a further extent. So
thanks,
economically,
Jeff.
If this is a problem.
I hear what you're saying. Now, Dan Scanlon, who covers police for the TU, we do have more officers on the streets than we used to.
Yes,
but what about his comment?
Well, unfortunately, there's been a lot of drop or retirements over the past 5 or 10 years. A lot of officers hitting a certain point and deciding they can make more in the civilian world, or they just retire on their pensions. We do have 100+ officers in the rookie training stage right now. Some are hitting the road. In fact, ironically, the last two police-involved shootings involved field training officers with rookies. You want to talk about your first few months on the road, and that's what you learn about? So there are more cops coming. We have taken a major hit in retirements over the past few years. The sheriff is saying at least we've got more in the hopper. There's more in the academy now. So they are coming. And that's budget that was allocated by the current mayor for the training of officers to make up for the cuts that were done in previous administrations.
Lots of people still waiting on hold to talk about this, but this has been a really busy news week.
That's a great topic.
Yes, we have hot topic after hot topic to mull over on this show today. So we're going to move on and talk about a few other news and notes from the week. It's 549-2937 to join us now. Also this week, a new poll was published showing that President Trump remains a divisive figure here in Florida. His approval rating in the Sunshine State is just under 50%. However, Trump does better in North Florida, including Duval County. 55% here say they approve of his job performance. 53% say they'll vote to re-elect him. At the same time, we learned early this morning that Trump's longtime confidant, Roger Stone, has been arrested in South Florida in Fort Lauderdale. He is facing seven federal charges related to the Mueller probe into the Trump campaign's possible coordination with Russia in the 2016 election. This is an emerging story. It had long been expected that Roger Stone might be facing an indictment. He is now indicted via a federal grand jury on 7 counts, longtime South Florida presence. So we've got this national story playing out in Florida, guys. At the same time, we have a new poll looking at where the president stands in Florida. And by the way, we have our own local election coming up. So lots to discuss with all of these various threads. Angela.
Whoa. Yeah, where do you start
with
this?
Where do we begin? I know.
Yes, where do you start with this? You know, it's very interesting going back to our elections. And, you know, your initial question was, is he divisive? You know, who is he divisive in Florida? Well, you know, your top leaders, think of it, our top leader here in Jacksonville supports him. Our top leader in our state supports him. And you cannot talk about him without people getting angry, because either way you feel, whether you're for or against him, you're not in the middle. when it comes to you-know-who. You know, when you come to him, when you're talking about him, it's one way or the other. But I think sometimes we need to step back and look at the facts of why is this divisive, right? What's happening? What are we seeing? We just saw, what was it, last week or so, with a young man confronting the Native American, just staring him down. That's one issue.
And that was fascinating, too, because when you looked at the longer video, there was more context given to that altercation or the situation. And at the same time, it just confirmed what we already knew about our politics. People looked at that video and saw
what they wanted to see. Exactly.
And so if you are someone who really opposes President Trump, you saw a privileged, snotty young kid disrespecting a Native American. If you support President Trump, you saw a Native American being aggressive toward a child. And so, you know, it's really extraordinary. But bringing it back to Florida.
Yeah.
Okay, so as you mentioned, Angela, Governor DeSantis and Mayor Lenny Curry are both strong supporters of President Trump. Given how divisive he is in Florida and nationally, it's surprising that more hay isn't being made out of this probe in Florida. But that could change now that we're seeing an arrest here in Florida this morning.
It's no longer about morality. It's about ideology. And as long as you believe in what another person believes in, then you can pretty much get away with anything. It seems like in today's environment. You know, I just wonder if 20 years ago we would have been this forgiving of elected officials who had behaved in the manner that we see the president behaves. Many people just kind of say, you know, the rudeness is just part of his the way he operates, and it's different. And they want to see the shakeup. They embrace the shakeup, the changeup in Washington.
But the words are so hurtful. The words are hateful. The words are so hurtful. They're very fine people on both sides.
But the what matters
one group of people are murderers and rapists.
The ideology matters more. And to prove that, also, Melissa, in those numbers were the fact that 90% of African Americans disapprove. And I think that in some ways, the supporters of the president almost celebrate that. They've done absolutely nothing to try to improve that perception at all. And, you know, and that's troubling to a lot of people when it comes to, you know, how you're trying to govern over a particular state.
Let's talk about the fact, though, that in North Florida, President Trump still has a majority approval rating, Dan Scanlon. And that is something that plays a role in our local elections.
Yes, it's highly Republican here. And we have Republicans running. A lot of Democrats are not running. That's just the way it is. And it was no surprise to see the city turn that way, although there's been a rising Democratic wave in recent elections. Incidentally, the White House has weighed in on the Stone arrest, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, saying that the arrest has nothing to do with the president. Quote, the charges brought against Mr. Stone have nothing to do with the president, nothing to do with the White House. That's a standard response, I guess, from the White House at this point as they try to distance themselves
right.
from that.
Yeah.
20
right.
years ago, that would never fly. You know, just
not
would,
at all.
It would never have flown 20 years ago.
Stone facing seven federal counts, and this relates to his communication with a cutout figure, a go-between between Stone and allegedly the Trump campaign and WikiLeaks. This has to, and so what we will learn, I haven't had a chance to read the indictment yet, but whether Stone had the knowledge and approval of the campaign when he acted as this go-between, or whether he was acting on his own.
So politically, people have to continue to work on what they believe is the best policy for the country, and people get exhausted by trying to separate the two. You know, trying to separate the character of the person who's in office with their political beliefs and political ideologies based upon what they believe is best for the country or for the state.
And
it is it's very exhausting.
Yes, it is. John is on the west side. Go ahead, John. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning, ma'am. I'm just wanting to comment on this Roger Stone and Donald Trump and the whole shebang. I mean, what are we going to tell our children 20 years from now? We put a president in who had mafioso attitude. What are we going to tell our children 20 years from now that
here we shut down the government because president made a promise of a wall he knew that he wasn't going to be able to do. And he lied to the people and told them, saying, hey, well, Mexico is going to pay for it. Now we have 800,000 people can't get paid. And we sitting up here talking about separating character from his job. I thought that was one of the main prerequisites of even being a president. But now all of a sudden, because it's Donald Trump, we just excuse all of the nasty things he said. I mean, just imagine if somebody called you a SOB. The first thing they doing is calling your mama a SOB. What would you want to do to them? So I don't understand, why are we sitting up here making all of this big thing? We all know the man colluded with Russia. He owes Russia $1.3 billion. Okay, and this is why he did not want the American people to see his taxes.
Well, we don't know that, John, but I think we're going to have to wait for the investigation to play out.
We've been watching Donald Trump since 1984. Okay, and Donald Trump has always been in bankruptcy and using eminent domain to do what he has done.
Thanks, John. Yeah, John, and I take all of your points. We just have to try to wait for the facts to emerge. And as John pointed out, yes, the government shutdown continues. It's affecting a lot of folks in our area, local Coast Guard, in particular.
The TSA.
The TSA at the airport, and they are missing their second paycheck today. Yeah. And so that's another story that, of course, is affecting the country, but it's affecting our region as well.
Yeah. And again, it goes back to ideology versus policy. And it's very difficult to separate. And what we have is a fight for policy over ideology. And, you know, because during the campaign, the president said, you know, made a promise, that's ideology. But policy is different. And coming to grips with how you develop that policy and how to make it best for the country is where we are now. And it's very difficult to separate that when you're talking about people's lives and their livelihoods.
And Melissa, to the question.
Wait a second. Terry is in Arlington. Let me get a few more calls on. Lots of folks waiting on hold. Terry in Arlington, good morning.
Hi. I just wanted to say that, you know, I spent a lot of time listening about the crime issues in Jacksonville, and I just wanted to see what I could do to help. I own a big family website in Jacksonville, and can you please share what types of events or support that our website could do to help, number one? And then number two, for economic stimulus, you know, I own a website, a Facebook page. Can we do some sort of trainings in that area of town that can help? And that way they can have a business online, and that's economic stimulus without having infrastructure or starting a restaurant or doing retail. So please help us with what we can do to help here in Jacksonville with our own people.
Sure. You know, are so many nonprofits already working on. Oh, she hung up. But Terry, there are so many nonprofits already working on these types of issues. And I would encourage you to just give one of them or even more than one of them a call and ask them how you can turn your talents to helping, whether it's Beaver Street Ministries or Sanctuary on 8th Street, or the Boys and Girls Clubs of Northeast Florida, or the Clara White Mission, or
Kids Hope Alliance.
The Kids Hope Alliance, which is the city run, that you may have to deal with some additional layers of bureaucracy on that one. But there, you know, here's what I suggest you do, and anyone who's listening, go to the Nonprofit Center of Northeast Florida's website and just start looking up the nonprofits in town that work in troubled neighborhoods, particularly with kids. There is so much need out there, and there's so much people can do to help. You can write a check, or if you have a special talent or skill that you want to help train kids to do, they will accept your help. So, Terry, I hope you're still listening. Just go and look up a few nonprofits, the ones I mentioned or some others, and just help them. The need is great.
I mean, the police union, Fraternal Order of Police, certainly spearheads a lot of fundraising efforts out there.
The Police Athletic League.
Police Athletic League certainly is right smack in the middle of one of the worst zip codes in the city for homicides. And even this weekend, veterans are working with some individual officers and the Fraternal Order of Police to raise money for the Adams family, the police officer whose bailiff wife was tragically killed in a DUI-related accident approximately 2 months ago. There's so much that's happening out there. You just need to hunt it down, and a few little Google Melissa,
wouldn't it be great, Melissa, if we can, you know, you hear this lady wanting to help, right? Mm-hmm. This goes back to in our state, nationally, if we can all find ways to come together, find ways to find that common ground, you know, even though we have a president that some may agree with, some may not agree with, but if we can come together, find this common ground, this lady had a great idea. How can I help? How can I do this? You know, if we put our country first, start thinking about what's right for our country, what's the right thing to do? What's the right thing to make sure that we have more than 800,000 people to make sure they get their paycheck, right? If you work, you expect to get paid. How can we make that happen?
Donate to your local food bank right now because the Coast Guard is going to that.
So these are all different ways that we can help. And if we can just come together in that way, I know it sounds simple, but if we could just maybe do that.
And there are more people in this community that want to help and want to support people in the community and want to do something positive, but the rhetoric drowns them out. And so, you know, that's why people have to work from the bottom up to make sure that their ideas, like this young lady here, are being heard. And I would also recommend that she contact her district or councilman member or their at-large council member or even the mayor's office. I'm sure they would be interested in hearing some great ideas.
And I think Terry said she was in Arlington. That's, I believe, Councilwoman Joyce Morgan. Mm-hmm. So give her a call. Just go to coj.net and look up her office number. So hope that's helpful, Terry. Lots of ways you can help. All right. Now, as Angela said, we have to try to end divisiveness in this country. Unfortunately, stories keep emerging, which are making that difficult. Florida's top elections official, Secretary of State Michael Ertel, abruptly resigned yesterday after pictures of him were published in blackface. These were images where Ertel was dressed up as a Hurricane Katrina victim at a 2005 Halloween party. This revelation is a blow to new Governor Ron DeSantis. He has been trying to bridge racial divides after a bitterly fought election against Andrew Gillum, who was trying to become the state's first black governor. So, you know, these pictures of Ertel showing him in blackface were taken 14 years ago. However, he was a public official at the time. He was Seminole County Supervisor of Elections. You see him in blackface, dressed up as a woman. He's got on a New Orleans Saints bandana, fake breasts, and he had on a T-shirt that said "Katrina victim." And so, as the pictures were published, he stepped down. DeSantis called the publication of the photos unfortunate, but also a side distraction. I'm getting lots of tweets from people pointing out all the other recent controversies around the country where people have lost their jobs or been kicked out of schools for posting photos or images of themselves in blackface. Of course, Megyn Kelly lost her job on the Today Show late last year when she said on the air she didn't understand what the big deal was about blackface, why it's so offensive. And so for those listening who might not understand, there is no circumstance under which it's okay for a white person to dress up in blackface. It goes back to the racist tradition of minstrelsy in Jim Crow America. It's extremely hurtful and it's offensive, and it just should never be done. And so, particularly if you're a public official. You know, this is something that once again, you know, in 2019, we're still seeing this crop up again and again and again.
Yeah. And what's the sad part about it is that Governor DeSantis had been enjoying a good start. Mm-hmm. Right. And this is definitely a setback. And some people are really not satisfied with his response to this because he didn't really condemn the situation or his friend, he just kind of said, I accepted his resignation and we're going to kind of keep moving forward.
And it's really unfortunate. Well, it's sad that the words were unfortunate and it was a sideshow, a side distraction.
Yeah.
A side distraction. And that is unfortunate, Melissa, that in this day and age that this is still occurring. And it's important. This is why I think it's so important for us to have discussions for people of different races, of different cultures, mm-hmm. to sit down and ask and talk with each other. We have to be able to say, okay, no, but someone like Megyn Kelly, she's been alive, what, more than 40 years? She knows a blackface has not been acceptable in her 40 years of life. It, you know, so it's not acceptable. people.
No, that's the problem, and I think that
that's why she lost her job.
Yeah, but she was
questioning
that.
She was saying, "Why is this unacceptable?"
Yeah. So you look at 14 years ago. You know, we didn't have iPhones and we weren't doing selfies and so forth. And so I would imagine that Ertel in his situation felt like, you know, it was an inside joke and he was doing something funny. And at the same time, he didn't know that he was doing something offensive. Yet he's supposed to know. And he's being held accountable now for something he had to be educated on 14 years later. He certainly had to know.
You would think, but like I said, it goes back to Melissa. We've got to have these real discussions. We can't be afraid to talk about race with each other. If I have a question about a Hispanic person, Asian person, Caucasian person, we should be able to ask those questions back and forth and be able to have that. And a lot of times we don't have those real discussions at all, mm-hmm. Melissa, because people are afraid
to say what they really think.
You know.
They're afraid of offending. They're afraid of being called a racist. There are so many reasons
why. But that's
why
it's education, though. Then you have to educate someone for their ignorance, you know, because you can fix the ignorance, right?
It's also interesting that you would think that the government would have done a background check and found this. Instead, it is a legitimate Florida newspaper reporter and team who discovered this. If they could find it, why did not the state of Florida in vetting this position, this person, before he was brought in?
Exactly. And, you know, getting back to the history, minstrel shows, you know, were very popular during the Jim Crow era. And they were all white performers, some of whom would dress up in blackface to caricature and mock and denigrate mm-hmm. African Americans. The idea was to just portray people of color in the most demeaning way possible, hold them up as objects of mockery and ridicule. And so, you know, for those that question why this is so hurtful, there's a long history behind it. And I think that so many Americans still don't understand our history.
Yeah. You're explaining it, Melissa, right now. You're telling people
I'm trying
why.
To, yes.
And
I'm
you're
trying
doing
to.
A very good job. You're eloquent with doing it.
And unfortunately, again, the background on Ertel is that he was a good guy. You know, he was respected in the community by both Democrats and Republicans, and had performed
well in his role in Seminole County as supervisor of elections there. So, okay, one more topic to get to. JEA is getting closer to finding a new home for its headquarters. They're looking at three locations: Lot J next to the football stadium, TIAA Bank Field, a location on the South Bank next to the Kings Avenue Skyway Station, or they may move to a vacant lot near the Duval County Courthouse. I'm going to go way out on a limb, Dan, and say that I'm going to guess that they're going to end up in Lot J next to the football stadium.
And while that sounds like a delightful reason to draw more people, as we've discussed on this roundtable, draw more people into that entertainment, I would think the costs are going to be exorbitant to build there, and you're not going to have great parking because allegedly you're going to have everybody else going to all of Shad Khan's entertainment facilities. One little tidbit, are you aware that the round section of the current JEA building on top used to be a revolving restaurant?
I learned that yesterday.
Right. Yes, it
I
was.
I learned that yesterday. Yes.
Really
amazing.
Cool.
That was a revolving restaurant for many years.
And Melissa, I've been talking with people, and some would say the most cost-efficient solution, the most cost-efficient place to move the building would be there on the South Bank, riverfront property. The building's already there. There are many restaurants around the area. You have the Skyway that's there. So if people who are on that area need to go downtown, you have the Skyway. You can get there easier. So who knows? Go, let me go out on a limb and say that one,
if
Melissa.
If you're looking for development of the La Villa area, which needs it, right next to the courthouse would be much better, because then you're bringing in a very vibrant government operation next to the courthouse, which has room for expansion, and then more life, more restaurants, and that part of the city of Jacksonville downtown gets developed and has another anchor, along with the beautiful new JTA facility that is nearing completion down near the Prime Osborne.
And some of the folks I spoke with said that was the most attractive site, because it was supposed to be part of a land swap where DEA would give them that land for the existing land that they, you know, building facility they have now, and it would you know, draw more people into the courthouse area, almost creating another court like they used to have when the old courthouse facility down there. And so we have to see how it plays out. But certainly, like Melissa said, I think pretty much all bets are probably going to be on lock yet.
Yes. Now, let me ask you quickly as a follow-up, some criticism going in against the utility for seeming to want to move from the urban core, where there's been this big push to get more bodies downtown in the urban core, and putting it so close to the river, putting a government building that's a vital government building and the one that's going to help us in the event of a severe storm, putting it so close to the water where the increased risk of storm surge is certainly, it is a flood zone. So what about that?
Well, you know, that's true as well, but it's all going to come down to money and what the best deal looks like for the money that JEA can get. And how much economic development options there are going to be coming off of that. And if you look at, we talked about the three sites that are the finalists, but the one that's near the courthouse, for many people, seems like the best option because you're going to have more density there. You're going to have more people, and there are already apartments going up in that area where people can live and work and move and about. So you would be able to create a more vibrant business area
if it went there. Let's take one more call. It's Janine in Riverside. Janine, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Sabine. I was just calling
Sabine.
The community know that there is a group called 904 that's developed a deck of cards called race cards. So if anyone does want to have these conversations around race and social justice and topics they're uncomfortable asking in that sphere, the deck is available free of charge, and there are trained facilitators that can come to any community event and hold these discussions.
Yes.
We had one last night as well.
Thank you so much for reminding us of that. 904, we're doing great work in the community. Give them a call if you want to spark a dialogue at your gathering. Thanks for that, Sabine. That's Sabine Purways, I think, on the line, a local nonprofit leader. Okay. Last but not least, it's our look at the strange, bizarre, and ridiculous from the week all around the state. Luckily, there is never a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now. Only in Florida. And only in Florida does a guy who can't swim jump in a lake to evade police and then end up having to be rescued by the same police. This one even made news all around the world, maybe because of the incredible video that went with the story. Now, Sarasota County Sheriff's deputies were pursuing a suspect named Richard Garay when he leaped into the water. Their aviation unit captured video showing Garay struggling to stay afloat after venturing out into the middle of the lake to escape capture. Deputies jumped in right after him and pulled him to safety. Garay thanked police for saving him, but he is not as thankful for the charges he is now facing, including several outstanding warrants for his arrest. But kudos to the police who saved his life and then threw him in jail.
At least he said, thank you for saving my life.
That's right. And thank you, Dan Scanlon, Charles Griggs, and Angela Spears for being here this Friday. Have a great weekend, guys. Thanks so much.
You too.
Have a good one.
And up next, what Bull Bean Coffee Roasters is brewing up all around town in addition to their great coffee. This is First Coast Connect. We'll be right back.
And I listen to Andrew describe for them his perfect woman, who doesn't sound much like me. She sounds like a porn star, who's also a genius.
Join us next time for the Moth Radio Hour, true stories told live from the Public Radio Exchange, PRX.org.
Saturday at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
Wayne Hogan of the Tara Hogan Law Firm.
I'm Wayne Hogan. Distracted driving is deadly. Teens, yes. But adults, too, and there are millions more adults than teens. Arrive alive. Let's end distracted driving.
Learn more at waynehogan.law. The Jacksonville Symphony, considered the greatest opera ever written, Mozart's Don Giovanni, is reimagined by the Symphony through vivid projection on huge high-definition screens and including world-class singers from the Metropolitan Opera. January 25th and 27th, jacksymphony.org.
Matt Gleason decided to get a flu shot at his office last year.
This was right downstairs and free. Why not?
He fainted, a common reaction, but his coworkers called 911, and the doctor said,
she didn't notice any abnormalities, but to be on the safe side, she wanted to order all these tests.
Those tests cost him nearly $5,000. The bill of the month this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
If a researcher gets money from drug companies, who has the right to know about it? I'm John Dankosky. This week on Science Friday, some doctors aren't disclosing their industry ties. We'll look at this problem. Plus, the iconic rings of Saturn may not have always been there. That's on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Friday at 3 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
The leader of Venezuela's opposition declares himself the new president, pleasing protesters and the White House.
Nicolas Maduro is a dictator with no legitimate claim to power.
Also, a Zimbabwe crackdown turns violent. And after Indira, Rajiv, Rahul, and Sonia, it's Priyanka Gandhi's turn to enter India's political fray. The Friday News Roundup, next time on 1A.
Today at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
It's time for coffee. It's time for tea.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour, Jacksonville-based Bold Bean Coffee Roasters is brewing up some cool community collaborations, and they go way beyond their delicious coffee. Here with more, we welcome Jordan Mixon, a.k.a. the Saboteur. He's a sock fashion and menswear blogger. He's also a photographer and even a professional violinist. Hey, Jordan, good morning.
Good morning.
And also, good to have you also with us, Paul Carr. He's Bold Bean's employee trainer and barista. Hey, Paul.
Yes, ma'am. Glad to be here.
Okay, let's start with you, Paul. There's this collaboration between Bold Bean and Jordan, the Saboteur, as he's known. What is this all about? What's happening?
Well, let me tell you, our mission at Bold Bean is to foster community. Not only do we want to source and roast and serve the best coffee in the world, we really believe in our community and helping each other and working together. And so Jordan, being a coffee professional, a coffee consumer, and of course a fashion expertise expert, you know, I think of coffee as fashionable. I think of it as artistic. And so we reached out to Jordan and kind of just threw the idea at him, saying, hey, what if we had a sock, a coffee sock? And here we are.
A coffee sock. So you guys made one. Jordan, it's called the Bold Bean Unisex Sock.
That's
and
right.
You designed this, correct?
Correct.
What's it look like?
So the idea comes from, well, Paul had approached me while I was actually having coffee at Bold Bean and wanted to come up with an idea of a design that evoked Bold Bean without the letters or the printing literally saying Bold Bean, which worked for me because I think there's just a lot more creative freedom in that. So I would visit the shop and think about the customers, think about myself and the baristas. And one idea came in particular of a limited coffee release that came out last year that Bold Bean released. It was called the Cedra. And that can had like this really, just a really unique design. And the color schemes were like black and silver. So taking the idea of using the brand logo of that coffee flower and turning it into a novelty design, to me, it works because it works with the apparel that's already out, but it also just works on its own and you can just style it in any way that you would like it to.
Nice. Now, and going beyond the style of the item, this is where things get even more interesting because socks are one of the least donated clothing items, but they're one of the most needed. People in homeless shelters will always say that they need socks. So you are having a sock hop on Sunday.
We sure are, yes.
Tell us about the sock hop.
Yeah, this Sunday we've partnered with Grape and Grain Exchange. We've also partnered with one of their bartenders, which is a new and up-and-coming star in the city. His name's Nick Hogan. He works with Angel's Envy. He's putting together a little special cocktail menu. But yeah, we're encouraging people to come to this party and bring a pair of socks. Just like you said, we see there's a need here, and it's awesome that we can get around these socks and people bring socks and donate socks. So it's really about giving back. It's awesome.
So when you come out to the party, just bring a fresh, clean, new pair of socks. They will make their way to the Sulzbacher Center.
Absolutely.
And be donated to people that need it the most. You're also having a sock contest.
Yeah, Jordan, that's tell right. us a little bit more
tell
about that.
Tell us about the contest.
So I'm encouraging everybody to attend the party and style your Bold Bean socks in your creative way. It's kind of a twist on a cocktail attire. What I generally do on Instagram, I try to teach my audience how to style socks in different ways. And for this party,
how do you style socks? Wait a minute, I gotta ask. How do you style socks in different yes. ways? Yeah, I just put them on and go.
Yes,
so what am I doing wrong?
This is the sock-a-tour.
Well, I tend to actually dress myself backwards. I actually start with my socks and create an outfit around that. So I'm actually wearing Bold Bean socks right now, where the color schemes are black, white, and silver. Pretty neutral. You can do anything with that, but I paired that with dark navy pants, and then I'm wearing, well, no one can see me, but I'm just describing my sweater as like black and white. So for the party, with these socks, you know, you can style them with dress shoes. You can style them with like a nice, dressier, casual shoe.
You could even wear them with high heels if
exactly
you wanted
right,
to.
Absolutely.
With high heels. That's what I'm encouraging. And also just the overall outfit. So the boldest dressed is what we're calling it, is the name of the sock game contest. So I will be judging.
So prizes are available.
Prizes will be there, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. This is Sunday, January 27th. The Bold Bean and Sock-a-Tour Sock Hop Party at Grape and Grain Exchange in San Marco.
Yes, ma'am.
Don't forget to bring your socks to donate.
That's
and
right.
Get your sock game on. So this is happening Sunday night. Paul Carr of Bold Bean, Jordan Mixon, the Sock-a-Tour. Thanks for bringing your stylish presence here into
You're
the
awesome.
Studio.
Thank you so
My
much.
My pleasure. Thank
Thanks
you
for being
having
with us. And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum is our director. I'm Melissa Ross, and thanks for being with us here on First Coast Connect. 1A is up next. Don't miss our new statewide show, The Florida Roundup, coming up today at noon. And if you're listening to our rebroadcast tonight, keep listening for the Electro Lounge. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see you Monday.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.